Okay, let's dive in. Welcome everyone to this deep dive, one you actually requested into, well, a really critical topic, income and wealth inequality.
Absolutely. It's a huge subject and definitely packed with nuance. We've got this stack of material you sent over articles, research notes.
Right.
And our goal today is really to unpack it. We want to understand, based only on these sources, what income and wealth inequality actually are, why they seem to exist, you know, how we measure them.
And what governments might actually do about it, according to this material.
Exactly.
So think of this as us filtering through your sources, pulling out the key insights. Maybe we'll even find a few surprising points highlighted in the material. We're aiming for a clear picture, sticking strictly to what you gave us.
And the big question, the one weaving through it all and connecting back to you, the listener, is what does all this disparity actually mean for you? How does it shape the world we're all living in?
Okay, let's jump straight to basics then. One of the first things the sources really hammer home is the difference between income and wealth. They sound similar, right? People use them interchangeably all the time.
They do, but the material is clear. They are fundamentally different concepts. Income, according to these sources, is a flow.
A flow, okay.
Yeah, like money received over a specific time period. Think wages, salaries, interest you earn, maybe rent coming in, profits from a business. It's money moving into your hands, usually week to week, month to month, or year to year.
Right, like a river or a stream. It's the rate of water flowing past you.
That's a great analogy. And wealth, the sources define that as a stock.
A stock, so not flowing.
Exactly. It's the total value of assets you own at a single point in time. You know, your house, any land, stocks, bonds, savings in the bank, maybe valuable art or jewelry. It's a snapshot of what you have accumulated.
Ah, okay. So sticking with the water analogy, wealth isn't the stream flowing, it's the reservoir or the lake you've filled up over time.
Precisely. And this distinction, the material really stresses this. It's vital. You could have a really high income, fast-flowing stream, but if you spend it all...
You have low wealth, no lake.
Right. Or, conversely, someone might have a fairly modest income, but maybe they inherited property or they've been incredibly diligent savers and investors for decades. They could have significant wealth. Understanding flow versus stock is, like, step one.
Okay, that definitely clears things up. So inequality is about how unevenly those streams are flowing and how unevenly those lakes are distributed across the population.
Mm.
But how do we actually, you know, measure that unevenness? That's where the sources bring in a term I've heard before.
Yes, that leads us straight to the Gini coefficient. The material presents this as kind of the standard metric for quantifying this disparity for both income and wealth.
The Gini coefficient.
Right.
What does that number actually tell us?
Well, the sources explain it's basically a single number, usually between 0 and 1. Sometimes you see it as 0 to 100%, same thing. It just summarizes the degree of inequality in a distribution.
And what do the ends of the scale mean? 0 and 1.
So a Gini of 0 means perfect equality.
Mm.
In theory, everyone has the exact same income or the exact same wealth.
Okay, total equality.
And a Gini of 1, that's perfect inequality. One person has absolutely everything and everyone else has nothing.
Wow, okay. So the closer the Gini number gets to 1, the bigger the gap between the richest and poorest.
That's the takeaway from the material, yeah. It also mentions, sort of in passing, that the Gini is derived from something called the Lorenz curve, which is a graph showing the cumulative share of income held by cumulative percentage of the population, a visual way to see the bend away from perfect equality.
Interesting. And the sources also give some global context for Gini numbers, right? Like what a high or low score might suggest.
They do. They highlight a general pattern. Developed countries often have lower Gini coefficients. The material suggests this is partly due to things like social safety nets, more progressive tax systems, maybe.
Yeah.
Whereas developing countries, the sources note, off show higher Gini coefficients, indicating, well, greater inequality generally. That difference itself is a key finding that policy and development levels seem linked to this measure.
That really ties the measurement back to potential causes and solutions. Okay, so we know income versus wealth. We know how to measure the gap with Gini. Now, the big one the sources dig into, why? Why does this inequality exist? What are the economic forces the material points to?
Yeah, the material lists quite a few factors here. One of the most prominent ones is differences in education and skills.
That feels pretty intuitive.
Yeah.
The sources seem to say that better education, higher skills, they generally lead to higher paying jobs, while lacking access to quality education holds people back.
Absolutely, and that links directly to earning potential. Then there's inheritance, which the sources highlight as a major factor, especially for wealth inequality.
Oh, right. Passing wealth down generations.
Exactly. It gives some people a huge advantage, right? Capital to invest, property that generates rent. It's a massive head start that others just don't get.
Which leads smoothly into the next point the sources make. Asset ownership itself. Owning things like businesses, properties, stocks. The material says this generates wealth passively through capital gains or dividends.
Right. It compounds wealth in a way that just earning a wage often can't match. The sources also point to labor market structures.
How so?
Well, some jobs are just more valued by the market, or they need scarce skills, so they command higher wages. Plus, things like the strength of unions or an individual's power to bargain for better pay, these create differences too.
And here's one that jumped out at me from the material. Monopoly and market power. How do the sources connect that to inequality?
The idea presented is that individuals or companies with a lot of market power, less competition, can kind of dictate terms, maybe setting higher prices or, for those at the top, pulling in much higher compensation themselves. This concentrates wealth.
And the sources also bring up some really systemic issues like discrimination based on gender, race, even where someone lives.
Yes, the material is clear that these factors can systematically block access to good education or job opportunities for certain groups. This limits their ability to earn and build wealth, often locking in existing inequalities.
And finally, maybe most critically, the sources argue that government policies themselves, especially taxation, can either help reduce inequality or, well, make it worse.
Exactly. The material specifically mentions regressive tax systems, where lower earners actually end up paying a larger proportion of their income in taxes compared to higher earners. That kind of policy can actively widen the gap. It shows policy isn't neutral.
Wow. So the rules of the game, set by policy, are identified as a key driver, which is the perfect setup for the next big section in the sources. If policy can be part of the problem, it can also be part of the solution. What kinds of redistribution policies does the material discuss?
The sources cover several government interventions aimed at, you know, creating more equity or providing a safety net. One big one is the minimum wage.
Okay, the legal floor for pay. The rationale in the sources seems to be about preventing worker exploitation and ensuring a basic living standard.
That's the core idea presented. It helps reduce in-work poverty. But the material also acknowledges the debate. Critics, as noted in some sources, worry that if it's set too high, businesses might cut jobs or hire less, potentially harming the very low-skilled workers it's meant to help.
Right, so the sources present that potential trade-off.
Okay.
What about transfer payments?
These are direct payments from the government. No work required in return at that moment. The sources give examples like pensions for retirees, unemployment benefits, child allowances, disability support.
These are like a very direct way to boost the income of people who need it most.
Exactly. The material frames these as essential parts of the social safety net. They directly fight absolute poverty and give some financial security to people who can't work or are between jobs or retired. A clear redistribution mechanism.
Then we get into the tax system itself. Progressive taxes, inheritance taxes, taxes on capital.
Yeah, the sources define a progressive tax system clearly. The tax rate goes up as your income goes up. So higher earners don't just pay more tax in total, they pay a larger percentage of their income in tax.
And the stated goal there, according to the material, is to directly reduce income inequality by using that revenue for public services or those transfer payments we just talked about.
Precisely. The sources also discuss inheritance tax, taxing wealth when it's passed down generations. The aim presented there is to limit how much wealth gets concentrated just through family lines, trying to level the playing field a bit.
And capital gains tax, taxing the profits from selling assets.
Right. The argument in the sources is that without it, people with lots of assets could make huge profits from investments that go largely untaxed, widening the wealth gap significantly compared to wage earners whose income is taxed. The overall idea behind all these taxes, progressive income, inheritance, capital gains, is to have the wealthier contribute a larger share to fund society and to put some brakes on extreme wealth concentration.
Okay, and the last category the sources cover is state provision of essential goods and services. This isn't cash, it's providing things directly.
Yes, this is about the government funding and delivering services either for free or heavily subsidized. The material lists examples like public education, healthcare, public transport, social housing, even basic things like clean water and sanitation.
And the logic here, as the sources explain it, is about universal access, making sure everyone, regardless of income, can get these fundamental things needed for a decent life and importantly, for opportunity.
Exactly. It's presented as a powerful way to tackle inequality, not just in the numbers, but in people's actual lives and potential. It helps prevent poverty traps, you know, situations where people can't afford the education or healthcare needed to get ahead. It promotes social mobility and ensures basic needs aren't just luxury goods determined by income.
Wow. Okay. We've really covered a lot of ground based on the material you provided. We started with that key difference. Income is a flow, wealth is a stock.
Mm-hmm. Then we looked at measuring the gap using the Gini coefficient, understanding what zero and one mean, and the typical patterns seen globally.
Then we dug into the why the source's explanations, ranging from education and inheritance to market structures, discrimination, and even how tax policy itself plays a role.
And finally, we explored the policy toolkit outlined in the sources. Minimum wage, transfer payments, different kinds of progressive taxes, and providing essential public services directly.
The sources make it pretty clear that tackling inequality is seen as a major goal in many places, and understanding these concepts and tools is, well, essential for that.
Absolutely. It's not just abstract economics. The material connects it directly to how societies function, who gets opportunities, what kind of baseline everyone starts from. It really shapes your world.
What's really interesting, pulling back and looking at the whole picture from the sources, is how interconnected it all is. These causes and policies, they don't exist in isolation, do they?
Not at all. They interact in really complex ways. A policy aimed at education might eventually impact labor market outcomes, which affects tax revenue, which funds transfers. It's all linked.
So thinking about the sources' final points on inclusive growth and social stability, here's a final thought for you, the listener, to chew on. How might the specific mix of these inequality drivers and policy responses in a particular country affect its long-term stability and its ability to achieve growth that actually benefits everyone? And reflecting on everything we've discussed from the sources, which factor may be a cause of inequality or a policy tool strikes you as the most impactful or perhaps the most challenging one to truly address effectively?